alive.
Blog Talk Radio.
Of FAPS. I am here at the Luxurious FAPS Studios. I am sitting here with my lovely partner, Amber, who is predisposed at the moment, but I also got another special guest with me, Kristen. What is up? How are you?
Oh, dude, it's so cold. I can't even. I thought we were so done with the snow.
Yeah, I'm ready for happy bunny weather right now. I need, like, Easter eggs and, like, flowers. I want to skip along in the tulips. I'm sick of the snow. My feet are cold. I mean, my feet are frozen. My toes are froze. I can't deal with this anymore.
Yeah, my buddy called me
cold.
From Florida.
What did you say?
My buddy called me from Florida and told me it was like 65, 70 degrees down there. I'm like, you know what? I hate your face. It's 32 and snowing.
That's probably freezing for them down there. They're probably like in mittens and long underwear, 55 degrees down there. You know, up here, it's like that shorts and, like, T-shirt weather.
Hello.
Amber's back. Back again.
Woohoo!
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm here. Just ready to talk to our guests. Good times. How are you liking this weather?
Ish.
Well, it's going to warm up eventually.
Yeah.
Summer time will hit eventually, and we will. Then I'll complain about how hot it is, so, you know, I can't win either way. So you guys have a good weekend?
I worked all weekend.
Oh, that's no fun.
Yeah.
How about you, Amber?
Can't complain.
I had some family in town, came from Radford. It was fun. Little baby girl stay in our house. It was really cute. But it was a full house. So a long line for the bathroom. That always sucks. That's okay. I'll forgive you just this once. Don't ever happen, let it happen again. No coughing on air.
I'll try not to.
No coughing.
All right, next time I'll try to mute it.
Nah. No, next time, just fucking burp on air. I don't care. Fart on air. No matter to me.
Achoo, burp.
There we go. See? Radio history.
Awesome. I haven't had quite enough Killians to let out a belt yet. Let me try to finish this one, and I'll think about it.
I went outside my cooler, and I realize I only have one beer in my cooler.
Oh, dude, that blows. And it's St. Patrick's Day? You need to fix that.
I know. I'll have to get some on the way home.
I forgot it was St. Patrick's Day.
Pick up some green food carlin. Yeah, St. Patrick's Day doesn't really do it for me anymore like it used to.
I forgot it was until somebody tried to pinch me.
I think everyone celebrated St. Patrick's Day on Saturday. Because, you know,
isn't that when they had
work?
Shamrock the Block?
Yeah. Yeah, I took Rihanna to Busch Gardens, and everyone was dressed up in green there, too, with all the shamrock sunglasses and all the crazy hats and shit. Just an excuse to get drunk, which I don't need an excuse to do anyway, so I don't need a holiday for that. I call it waking up.
I think St. Patrick's Day is another one of those days or holidays that gets misconstrued like Christmas does. It's not just a reason to get drunk. There's an actual legit reason behind it.
Oh, yeah. It's like people like care about the story of St. Patrick. You know, how he got rid of all the snakes. That's where there's no snakes in Ireland. You know, that's secondary. You got to think about drinking green beer, eating green bagels and shit. It's like Cinco de Mayo, you know. I mean, why would we celebrate Cinco de Mayo? We're not Mexican. But people use an excuse to drink margaritas and beer and shit, so.
America.
That's what it is. That's right.
America.
We like to drink. Turn any holiday into excuse to drink. It's Harbor Day, drink a beer. Labor Day, drink a beer.
Christmas, eggnog and rum.
Exactly. Veterans Day, drink a beer, you know, anything. Memorial Day, troops, it's all about drinking and freaking cookouts now. 4th of July, you know, drinking and cookouts. Not that I'm complaining. Because I do like drinking and do like cookouts, so, I mean. So, anyways, we got some really, really special guests coming on pretty soon, I hope. They're Seven Cities Paranormal. They're actually hosting a Paracon on April 19th in Newport News, and we're anxious to talk to them about it and hear about their group and everything.
Well, actually, I think we've got one of them on right now. Hello, hello.
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 Hey, guy.
Aloha.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
Who are we speaking with now?
Scott and Tim and Sarah and Jenny.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the show.
How y'all doing?
We're doing just fine. How are you?
Great. Good.
Good. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
No problem. Can you tell us how you guys got started?
Yeah, I guess, the short story is I was with another group. I'd started another group several years ago, and Tim had called me and wanted to be a part of that group, and eventually I got him a part of that group, and we were together for how long in that group?
2 or 3 years.
Yeah, a couple, 2 or 3 years. And our vision of what we wanted to do, where we were going to go, and why we were in this field was a little bit different than the group we were with. So we decided to break off and start our own group because we had mutual, you know, a mutual vision, I guess you'd say.
Okay. I gotcha. How long has the group been around?
For a year next month, right?
Yeah, this group, we've been together, a year next month.
Okay. Oh, okay. So you're still, I mean, so it's still a fairly new group with a lot of experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
We've been in several groups before this one.
Okay, I gotcha. So, what kind of background do the members have in the paranormal field?
Tim and I are the most seasoned, I guess. I've been, since I was 10 years old, I've been studying the paranormal after I had an experience that convinced me that there were such things as ghosts, I guess you'd say.
What was the experience, if you don't mind, saying?
That's fine. When I was younger, I used to see a fleeting black shadow in my house. I grew up in a haunted house, I guess you'd say. And one particular morning when I was about 10 years old, I was sitting in my den with my dog at the time, and I saw a black cat come from the kitchen through the dining room into the den where we were.
I'm sorry.
And the cat did not look. What's that?
I was talking to Ryan. He handed me a piece of paper, and I could hear it through here going.
Oh. Yeah, sorry. That's my fault.
Oh, no problem. And the cat did not look like an apparition or a spirit or what you would think of a ghost would be. It looked real. And it walked through our den and through the French doors out to the back.
So the French doors were closed when it walked through them?
Oh, yeah, they were closed.
Okay.
You're right.
Okay.
It disappeared through the French doors, I guess you would say. And at that point, you know, I realized what I'd been seeing all those years that would dart out of a room when I went into a room.
Mm-hmm.
I'd flip a light on, it coming in one doorway into the kitchen would be darting out the other door, or I'd turn into the hallway and it would dart into a room down the hallway. I realized that must have been what I was seeing.
The ghost cat.
And I knew it wasn't real because it walked through the closed French doors, but it looked real, like a real animal. It was not transparent. It didn't hover, didn't float. It didn't appear to be spirit-like or anything. And
wow.
At
That's
that point, I realized that there were such things as ghosts. And for me, being brought up in a religious household, you know, the fact that animals could be ghosts has puzzled me my whole life. So
that's interesting. You saw a cat spirit.
Right.
Because people see, like, you know, people or they hear things, but you saw an animal. You don't hear that every day. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And I questioned my mother about it that evening, and I asked her quite simply, do we have a black cat in the house? And she looked at my dad, and she looked back at me, and she said no, but we had a black cat before you were born. And he was hit by a car out in front of the house right before you were born. And I said, okay. And, I mean, it's kind of strange because my mother never asked me why I asked that question or anything. It just sort of, the subject was dropped after that. But
maybe she's seen the cat, too, and she didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, that could be it.
That's interesting.
But ever since then, as far as me personally, every book I've read, every book I've read in school that I didn't have to read, something that, you know,
yeah,
your English teacher told you to read. But everything has been on the paranormal since then.
Well, I guess once you see something like that, it's hard to go. It's hard to, go back. You know, put the monkey back in the basket. You gotta, once you see it, you gotta learn all about it.
Right. And Tim, I know Tim's been doing a long time. You want to?
Yeah, mine first started when I was around age 10 or 11, and I saw an apparition of my great-grandmother, and she used to come to me at least once a week. She never spoke to me, and she was really clear. You know, I could see through her, but I could see her whole body, and I could recognize who she was. And, you know, ever since, I guess, I was about 15 or 16, I saw her for almost 5 years, almost every week. And since then, I've not seen her at all. So that pretty much started my interest in the paranormal.
Do you think she was trying to tell you something or just trying to convey a message without talking or just to let you know she was okay?
Yeah, she died, you know, before I was even born, so that was the weird thing. But I saw pictures of who she was, and I recognized that was her. It actually happened in the house that she died in, which now my uncle lives in. And when I used to visit there and stay the night or something when I was a kid, it happened almost every time I was there.
Was there anything special about the room you were staying in? Was that her old room or something?
Well,
maybe that?
Yeah, it was the way she passed away is she had a heart attack and she fell down the stairs, which was in the
Ooh.
Room right behind where I was staying. And she fell down in the stairs and hit her head is what killed her. And it was in that room. The first time I saw her was actually through a window, and I could see her coming into the window. And she came right through, and I was scared. You know, I ran and told my uncle, you know, what happened. And, of course, my family was very religious, and
mm-hmm.
they thought I was possessed and all kinds of things.
You're possessed by the devil.
Yeah.
So your uncle living at the house,
he
never saw it?
No, no one's ever saw him but me. No one ever saw her but me. I asked
wow.
my brother because he used to stay in the same room with me. You know, he was a little younger than me, and I asked him, did he ever see anything? He says no. He was like one of those guys that can sleep through anything, you know. But he said he never
mm-hmm.
saw anything. But I don't know. She would come and sit on my bed and just look at me. And you know, I was a kid. I was scared to death. But I couldn't tell anybody because my family thought I was crazy too. So.
Yeah, I think I'd be pretty much scared to death too if I was, you know. If I saw my dead
yeah.
great-grandmother coming towards me, and I was 10 years old or however old you were, and
I found 10 or 11, but that's what started my interest in it. And ever since then, I've been trying to find out, you know, what I saw and why she would come to me, of all things. Or maybe, you know, it's just because I'm sensitive to it or something. My brother wasn't. I don't know.
Oh, that's a very interesting. That's amazing. That's really cool.
You guys want to tell your story how you started the paranormal?
You've got an interesting. Sarah's got an interesting story. Sarah's
hey, lay it on
a,
us. We'd love to hear it.
Kind of a clairvoyant.
Okay, well, mine I don't really like because I got made fun of for it, but I'll share it.
You're safe.
About, oh, you think so? Okay, cool. When I was four. All right. Well, let's start out with you know how. Like, kids will start talking to their imaginary friends.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, all right, well, mine was actually, a ghost of a young boy named John. And he was my very best friend from the age of 4 until I turned about 10. And I would hang out with him all the time. And my mom, she knew he was a ghost, and so did my grandmother, because it comes from my mom's side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to a private school, and I thought all kids had, you know, ghost friends like me, but apparently that just wasn't the case. So he would go with me to school, and the kids in my school would make fun of me for, like, talking to myself. So, like, I would defend him and all this stuff, and they would just make fun of me.
Well, kids don't understand.
Huh?
You know, I said kids just don't understand. I guess they don't have to, you know, deal with that.
Yeah.
You know.
I guess so. But yeah, he was my very best friend, and then of course, you know, so I went to this like private Christian school that was on Mennonite property, and I would see like other kids playing on the playground that I thought were like. Regular kids, and they weren't, they were ghosts. So then I got made fun of even more. And I would talk to this one girl that was in my classroom, and she was a ghost too, and so then they thought I was even more weird. It was just a long history of it. And then I never really talked to my mother about it. She knew, but she never said anything. And then when I turned
10, he left, and I started having questions, and my mom finally, you know, sat me down and explained to me what was happening, and really why all of these things made me different, because we have, like, a history of, I think we're Cherokee Indian, sounds right, we're Cherokee Indian down the line, and all of the women in that side of my family have this ability to talk and see spirits and communicate with, I guess, the dead. So that's really about it. Did I cover everything?
You did good, sir.
Okay.
What's cool is that nowadays people are more accepted or like more want to learn more about people with gifts and I guess kids have with psychic abilities can go talk to people and they don't feel so excluded like
before.
Yeah, I feel
a lot more open now.
Yes. Yeah, that's great.
Right.
Kids are, people are always more afraid of what they don't know, you know?
I think the fact that you had a supportive family that actually talked to you about it was actually pretty cool. I think that helped you a lot.
Yeah, it did. It helped me to make me feel like I wasn't, I guess, as weird, as excluded as I thought that I was. You know, because we have another lady in our group where her parents or her family thought that she was just crazy. So I'm pretty blessed that my family didn't, you know, send me to a lunatic asylum or anything like that.
Well, I mean, kids can be vicious to people with regular problems, you know? I mean, that's just...
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's just, I can't imagine what it's like for you.
Oh, it's good now, because people will be like, oh,
no.
You see ghosts, huh? I'm like, yeah, there's one behind you. You might want to turn around.
Is anybody else?
Jenny?
Jenny, you want to share your story? You want to share your story, Jenny?
Share with the class?
Where's Jenny?
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
Jenny's shy.
Okay.
Okay.
She's afraid all these people are going to be looking at her on the radio.
It's all good.
That's a good thing about radio. You can all be sitting
there
in your underwears. Nobody even
knows. I'm not sitting in my underwear, just so you know.
How do you guys go about your investigations?
Well, mostly what we do is private residences. And, you know, we'll get a call or an email. And first, I guess we'll, me being the case manager, I'll call them back and interview them over the phone, feel them out, you know, see what kind of claims, what kind of experiences are going on, what types of things are happening, get as much background information as I can over the phone with the initial interview. Then we usually set up an interview, a face-to-face interview, and we'll go out to the residents and, you know, talk to them some more, maybe talk to more witnesses or more people who've experienced things in the home. We'll get to see the home, the layout, actually, you know, see exactly where these things are happening. We'll get to do, take EMF readings if there's something electrical going on. You know, I'm an electrician by trade, so, you know, I'll do what I can without going into their electrical system to find out, you know, if there's anything going on there.
But that comes
in
handy.
EMF. Yeah. You know, sometimes you might have to, you know, be a plumber too or whatever, and depending on what the claims are, of course. If we think it's worthy of an investigation, which sometimes even if we think something else is going on, you know, it gives people peace of mind. If you can somehow get some kind of proof one way or the other,
mm-hmm.
But you know, after that, you know, we'll set up a time to come over and maybe do an official, you know, investigation. And we'll do that, and depending on, you know, what kind of evidence we gather,
you know, sometimes it takes more than, you know, just one investigation. A lot of groups, and of course what you see on television, you know, the guys go out and they get the claims and they set up and they do an investigation, they come back, they do a reveal, and they're gone. But
yeah.
In the real world,
yeah.
as you know, sometimes, you know, in order to get answers or to get a definitive, some kind of definitive proof or to come to a professional conclusion, I guess, you have
uh-huh.
to go back multiple
uh-huh.
times. You know, you have to go
oh,
back
yeah, no doubt.
For multiple investigations.
Definitely.
And sometimes you don't, but yeah, we'll do that. And once we, and we'll, of course, we'll keep in touch with the clients. And each time we go for an investigation, we'll give them that evidence and present that to them and tell them where we're at. You know, what we think at that point, and if it has to go on, you know, it'll go on. And then hopefully, eventually, you know, we'll come to some kind of conclusion or give them some kind of closure. We have a clairvoyant who's not present with us tonight, but she cleanses houses for us. So if the, you know, sometimes it makes the homeowner feel better if she comes out and, you know, does a house cleansing, you know. And sometimes they're okay with the ghost being there, so they're, you know, they're fine, you know. It depends on, you know, what's going on, but that's the basic, you know, in a nutshell, you know, how we handle it.
Well, that's cool. Do you have any, like, really kind of interesting cases you want to talk about without, like, divulging anybody's names or whatever? Just anything that's happened on a case that's been, like, kind of weird, I guess?
Yeah, I'm sure we got plenty of those. You want to talk about some, Tim, or I feel like I'm talking everything.
Sorry, you do good at it.
yeah, I like to talk. Let's see, something strange has happened recently. I always draw a blank when somebody asks me this question. I'm like, well, what do I, you know, what case do I pull from?
I thought it was pretty cool about the story with the last case we did with the, when she came in today and she had the pennies all lined up the staircase.
Yeah, I just wish we could have witnessed that.
Yeah. We didn't actually witness this, but the client did. So she came home one day and it was pennies stacked up all the way up the staircase. And
wow, that's weird.
Yeah,
I wonder what kind of significance the pennies had. If any at all.
That's what we were trying to figure out. But
well, they're copper, so they're like the easiest thing that a ghost can.
Right. They're she had a large jar up on her dresser upstairs of pennies.
Mm-hmm.
It was full of pennies. And she came home one day with the kids, and when she walked in the front door and looked at the steps, they were stacked two by two all the way up the steps. Right up to her dresser where the penny jar was sitting. And from what I've learned over the years and what Sarah was alluding to a second ago was that they were made of copper, and copper is supposedly one of the easiest things for a spirit to manipulate.
Yeah,
why
I did
they
not know
actually
that.
Stacked the pennies. Yeah, why the pennies were actually stacked that way or lined up that way up the staircase is still a mystery, but supposedly it's easier for them. That's one of the easiest metals or easiest things for them to manipulate is copper.
Oh, okay.
It is in the same house. She came home one afternoon, and her refrigerator that it took three people. This is back in the 70s, 60s. It took three men to put in the house, was pulled out into the middle of the kitchen floor, and it even ripped the linoleum up on the floor as it was drug across the floor. And this is one of those old, big-time, industrial 1960s refrigerators. Of course, nobody was home. Nobody, you know, it was no sign of any kind of break-in. Nothing was stolen. It was just the refrigerator was pulled out into the middle of the kitchen.
Was there more than one spirit at that house?
We believe so. We do believe there's more than one entity at that home.
Yeah, through EVPs, we identified at least two males and a woman there.
I say that's quite a jump from stacking pennies to ripping a refrigerator off the wall. I mean,
it was actually built by close to a Civil War burial ground that they built there. They actually have it documented there. There were a bunch of Civil War graves around there. And actually, we were doing some EVP sessions, and we actually got some names. We were asking, you know, of these Civil War soldiers, and they were actually answered. They identified by a few names. They didn't say what side they were fighting with, but they did say a few names. We think
you know, for
maybe
sure
they could have been
soldiers?
The ones that pulled the refrigerator. Yeah.
Have you guys, Howard wants to know, have you guys encountered anything like that before?
What's that?
I'm assuming he's... Huh?
Oh, God, go ahead.
No, what were
anything
you saying?
Like...
Sorry.
No, sorry. I didn't understand your question. Did we ever encounter what before?
Hang on, he's tight. He's probably gonna tell me what he means.
Right.
Sorry, every time I come on, I tend to cut people off, man.
That's okay.
That's what I thought about. Anything like the case you were just talking about. That's what I thought he meant.
Other cases like that, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's...
That's pretty much an extreme thing, where a refrigerator moves like that.
Yeah, and of course, we didn't witness that. That was just a claim, you know, that happened years ago. I mean, she lived in this house for 40 years and never wanted anybody to come in and investigate or what have you. And, you know, I met her son through another investigation, and she decided whatever is in the home she feels is scaring her grandson. So that's when she called us, and she said, hey, you know, I've been living with this for 40 years, so I want somebody to come out and give me some kind of information or find out what's scaring my grandson. But I think the most interesting thing about this whole case is there's a handprint on the wall in the living room, and they have painted over this handprint, they have put kills over this handprint time and time again, and the handprint will not go away. And it's definitely a handprint. I mean, I've got pictures, I've observed it, you know, very closely. It's definitely a handprint. And there have been, I guess it's pretty well known locally here. Hampton University has wanted to come out and study it, and several other people, parapsychologists in that.
What?
And, I mean, I've heard stories about that before, like there being a handprint or a footprint or some kind of imprint in a wall that you paint over and it keeps bleeding through. But I've never actually observed one firsthand until this case. And we're still puzzled about the handprint. And it's kind of strange how it appeared one day, and they've tried to paint over it, and it just won't go away.
So the handprint disappeared out of nowhere?
Yep. I think she said it was in January.
Happened a couple years after her husband died.
It was a year and a month after her husband died.
Yeah.
I don't know if that has any significance or not, but I guess they were repainting the living room. Her son was. And he had painted it one evening, put a coat of, you know, primer, and then put a coat of paint on it. And she went into the living room the next morning, and she was, you know, reading the Bible or something, she said. And she looked up, and she saw this handprint on the wall. And she called her son down and said, you know, where did this handprint come from? I thought you painted this last night. And he said, well, I did. So he painted it again. and it bled through. So he said, well, I'm going to put some more kills on it. So he put some kills on it and more primer on it and more primer on it, and then he painted it, and it bled through. And it's still there.
It's strange.
Maybe her husband was telling her that he didn't like the color that she was using.
It's kind of a neutral color.
Stop! Don't paint
it
this color.
Right.
So you saw the handprint?
Excuse me?
Yeah, you actually saw the handprint?
We've looked at it, taken pictures of it from different angles. I've touched it, and this is the weird thing. The first time we went over to her house, you know, I had to touch it, of course. And when I did, you can feel, this is no BS now, you can feel the fingerprints. You can feel the indentions of the fingers, it's somewhat three-dimensional, I guess you would say. You can feel the ripple of the fingers when you run your finger across the fingers on the hand.
Uh-huh.
And
that's wild. Do you think it's because they put so many coats of paint on it, and it just got deeper and deeper, and it just kept showing up? And that's you're really feeling the number of coats of paint on the fingerprints of the hand?
I don't know. I just know it's you know, when you run your finger across it, it's bloop, bloop, bloop. It goes down, you know, four fingers across the top, and you can feel them.
Even after they painted, you can still feel the finger indentions.
Yeah. And, I mean, she even said, you know, I wonder what would happen if we tried to paint over it now. And that might be something that we do. We might try to paint over it again to
see for ourselves, if
it'll bleed through again. I mean, because it's been years since they tried to paint over it.
I have a quick question.
Uh-huh.
If it's imprinted enough to where you actually have the endings of the fingers, is there any indication of, like, the actual fingerprints or the lines of the hand, or is it just the imprint?
Well, it's just the imprint because it's actually on a textured wall. The plaster is textured in that way, so you really couldn't get fingerprints out of it, I don't think.
That's a good
question.
That would be cool if it was on a flat wall. Maybe you could have gotten the fingerprint to see if it was her husband or not.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. It's kind of a small hand. It's smaller than mine. I don't have very big hands, but it's smaller than mine.
You think it's a male hand or?
Well, to me, it's kind of. It's probably. I don't know. It's either. It could be male, but maybe a young male, or maybe a female, or just a small guy. I guess I don't know. But it's quite a bit smaller than mine. But it's definitely. You can see the whole hand. I mean, it's the all five, you know, four fingers, the thumb, the palm. It's like somebody put their hand on the wall with something that, you know, that bleeds through. And I don't know what would bleed through that many coats. Even something oily, you know, with that many coats of paint and them deliberately trying to cover it up, it's just kind of hard to explain.
That's definitely strange, for sure. Something I haven't heard of before.
That's the first I've ever seen in 20-plus years. I've never seen anything like that.
Of course, you hear these stories. Sorry, go ahead.
You were talking first.
I'm saying, of course, you hear all these stories about the, you know, blood stains that won't go away, and, you know, there are, you read about them, but this first I've actually heard a first-hand account of something like that happening. So that is really, really cool to hear about that.
It's the first I've ever seen in all these years, too, man. So I was really surprised when I saw it and how many times they – if it wasn't for the guy who told us, because this guy is in the construction field.
Mm-hmm.
He paints and builds houses for a living.
So that's what he's talking about.
Telling me it's no way.
So how do you guys feel about ghost children?
Ghost children?
Yes.
Well, to me, I mean, I think a spirit, depending on, I guess if someone dies as a child, if a child passes and they don't cross over for whatever reason, that, you know, they can remain just like an adult. I mean, I don't have any kind of special. I know some people religiously don't think that, you know, that children are innocent, so children will go to heaven. They're not going to stay back in the, you know, earthbound plane or whatever. But I mean, I don't believe that at all. We've encountered children before, you know, spirits of children, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't have any specific theories or any ideas. I don't think they're any different than any other spirit you would encounter, per se. I mean, is that your opinion, Tim?
To me personally, I have a child, so I hope if a child passes, it wouldn't be trapped here. But like Scott was saying, I mean, we've got, you know, EVPs in the past that sounded like children playing. So, I hope they cross on, but, I mean, I believe that some of them are left back.
Well, Sarah, you had the imaginary friend? Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Hey, Sarah. He was asking about children and the paranormal, and how do you feel about children and the paranormal? Do you have any idea?
What about children and the paranormal?
He wants to know about, like, children's spirits. What do you think about children's spirits? Do you think that children can be ghosts, or do they pass on?
Yeah, well, my imaginary friend, he was 8 when he passed away, or was it 9? He was 8 or 9 when he passed away, and he died of pneumonia, and his mom had died giving birth to him. So when he died, he couldn't cross over because he wanted to stay with his father, because then his father was alone. And he stuck around his house, and he tried to, like, get his father's attention and let his father know that he was there, but his dad just, like, didn't get it. Like, he didn't, I don't know if maybe he ignored it or, like, maybe John couldn't, like, manifest himself well enough for his dad to see it. But John passed away in, like, the early 1900s. And his dad passed away 20 years later. And I don't remember what his dad died of. But, yeah, children do come back. They don't cross over because they're scared their parents are going to be mad at them.
So that's why John stuck around?
Yeah, he stuck around for a really long time. Like, I was born in 93, so I was 4 and, if I can do math correctly, I don't know, 97?
Yeah. That's right.
Because I look at the guys for the answers.
We're dinosaurs, sir.
Nice.
So do you think John has crossed over now, or do you think he's with another child?
No, my mom actually told me that the reason he went away was because she helped him cross over.
Oh.
So, cool. She never told me how she did it because I was so heartbroken that he was gone that it just didn't matter to me how she did it. But, yeah, she helped him, and I guess he's good now.
Well, good. And you said you saw kids playing in the playground? Like,
yeah.
You ever talk to them, or tell you, like, we're
right.
Why they were there?
No, nothing like that. You know, well, I was only, I guess, 11. I didn't really care why they were there at that point. I just wanted someone to hang out with. So.
Oh, yeah, I guess, yeah.
But
those
kids that were there when I would play on the playground when I was younger, I've gone back since then, and they're not there. Like, I guess they're just not there when I'm there, or maybe they only come out when it's recess time for the kids at the school or what, but I wouldn't see them every day. I would see them periodically. I guess I think it had more to do with the time of year.
Okay.
That's where I get a little confused, where it comes with, like, child ghosts, I guess you could say, child spirits, because John was with me every day, 365. So, I mean, I guess maybe he was different. Maybe he was more connected with me, and since I had the abilities, he could, like, use my abilities for his gain so he could be there all the time. But the kids at the playground were only there certain times of the year, and they never seemed to really understand that the years were going by, that time was changing. They were kind of stuck.
So do you think that they leave behind more energy than adults, maybe?
I think it might be possible because, you know, even as, I guess, real-world people, like, kids obviously have more energy than adults as it is.
Yeah.
So
I think that
could be possible. Yeah, I mean, a two-year-old runs around, and I'm tired after 5 minutes of chasing his butt.
So. Yeah.
Do you feel like the children would actually maybe show themselves or give more EVPs to people of a certain age range than they would, like, an older person or a younger person?
You know, I think, honestly, it just has to do with how, like, I know this sounds weird, but how appealing the person looks. Like, if the person, like, looks like a mom, I feel like a kid would be more inclined to come out or show themselves or give EVPs if they feel comfortable. It's just like, if Timmy put on his mean face and I was, like, a ghost little kid, I wouldn't come out at all.
Yeah, Timmy, don't put on your mean face, Timmy.
I have a nice face.
I'm just saying, if it was mean, I wouldn't come out.
I got you.
We have a question from Dennis. He wants to know, what is the strangest hard evidence you've received, like VPs, video, and that?
I saw eyes in a trailer that scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, that was...
That's the hardest.
You saw an eye in the trailer?
Eyes, like a pair of eyes.
Ooh. Yeah. There was a property that my family owned that was, there three deaths had taken place there. And, you know, we just, you know, one day decided, hey, that'd be a good place to go. It was vacant, so, you know, that'd be a good place to go investigate. And we had been there a couple of times, and Sarah had shown interest. She had called and wanted to be a part of a group. So, and, you know, she claimed to be clairvoyant and, you know.
And he didn't believe me, so he took me to the scariest place in the world.
No, it wasn't even a believer, but.
Trial by fire, huh?
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
We took her there to, you know, because we were familiar with the place and who had passed there and familiar with the history and everything. But we'd kind of taken her there to, I guess, to test her ability, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And when we were there, we went into the center bedroom where most of the activity took place, to make a long story short, and we got an indication on a K2 meter. I did. And, well, Sarah said, he's up in the corner of the room. I said, well, what does he look like? And she said, it doesn't have a form. It's just a black
mass
in the upper corner of the room. So I stuck the K2 up there where she said to, and the K2 meter went off. It went off for several seconds, and then it stopped lighting up, and she said, he moved. He's over in front of the window. So I moved the K2 meter over to where she said to move it, and the K2 meter lit up again. And this happened a couple of times. I followed it around the room wherever Sarah told me to put it. And so one of our investigators started provoking this thing.
Idiot.
And it finally started to take shape, a humanoid type shape. And when he continued to provoke, it took full form and had, what, yellow eyes, you said, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of showed itself to Sarah, who was, you know, 18 at the time, and here she is bursting into tears, saying it showed itself to me, it showed itself to me, and she's crying. The investigator who was provoking runs out of the room, out into the front porch, and starts to throw up profusely. It was quite an experience,
wow,
to say the least.
Was it so Sarah's the only one who actually saw the entity, and it just made,
correct,
the other person,
yeah,
sick?
Yeah, correct. She's the only one that actually physically saw it. But we documented,
wow,
it. I mean, it was,
wow,
there was definitely something there. I mean, I followed her around the room with a K2 meter, and she told me exactly where to go with it, and it lit up. It indicated something was there. I mean, wherever she pointed her finger. So
if you couldn't see it there, how did you know where it was, where you could put the K2? Would you just feel them there, feel the spirit there, or it just wasn't like a...
I just knew. it looked like a black mass, and I could,
mm-hmm,
see its movement, but it was moving on. You know how when cars go by really fast and someone takes a picture and there's like a light trail behind it?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so it was kind of like that, but in black mass form. So it would move quickly, and I would just see like the tail end of it where it would stop, and I would like kind of guesstimate where the mass was at that time, because it would go in and out of focus for me.
Mm-hmm.
It started like at the corner, and then the guy who was provoking told me to look in the closet where I saw like a deformed hand with only three fingers. So that's where that started, and then we kind of chased it around the room until it got pissed off and decided to like scare me. So
this happened to you a lot? I mean, do you see stuff like all the time, or is it just like every once in a while,
like,
you'll see something?
I mean, if I really focused on it, I could probably see something every day all the time, but I've learned how to turn it on and off, so I really only use it for investigation purposes.
Oh, that's a good skill to have. You know, I don't know if I want to wake up and see like a dead child staring at me when I'm sleeping or something. I'd probably say that.
Yeah, that's kind of
fun. Even when living children do that, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Dennis would like to know if there is any justification for the deformed hand.
Yeah, did we ever figure out about the... I guess it just belongs to the guy with the face.
Oh, you're talking about in the...
Yeah, in the trailer, the justified... Did we justify the hand?
Well, I never, you know, I don't, I'm about as sensitive as a rock. I don't see or anything unless it's, you know, unless it, I mean, if I see something, it's just something there. But
you'll be
the
exact same one.
Yeah.
People be like,
I have to
I
get
did.
It on,
I
have to get it scientifically.
Well, there was a lot of good EVPs caught that day, too.
Right. This place we went, you know, it's good that my family owned it because we went back time and time again. And we got some of the most amazing EVPs. I mean, clear. We're not talking a whisper or something you have to decipher. These are like voices.
Out, yeah.
Yeah, these are like voices like I'm talking, you know, I'm speaking to you right now.
That's great, man.
It was, it seemed as though there was one entity, and we've, throughout the years, I've noticed this in quite a few locations. That there was one entity that seemed to control the rest of them, if you know what I'm saying.
It's like the
yeah.
head honcho. There was like a head honcho there, like control the rest
right.
of the spirit. Okay. How'd you figure that out?
Well, some of the EVPs we caught, there was one particular voice that came through a lot that would be giving certain commands. One of them is the famous stop growling EVP. You'd hear other EVPs from different spirits say, he's coming, or...
Remember you were asking to speak to your uncle.
No, it was Mr. Williams. That was the first.
It was like
yeah.
spirits were asking for them to come forward to speak to you.
Right, right. Well, yeah, when we called
right.
Jimmy, yeah, when we would say, is Jimmy here? You would hear other spirits calling for Jimmy. Hey, Jimmy. Or come here, Jimmy, or something like that. And then you'd hear EVPs like, he's coming, or get quiet, or...
No.
Yeah, like there was somebody that was menacing, you know, over them or controlling them or that they were afraid of, so to speak.
You said there were two deaths on the property?
Three.
Three deaths on the property. Could you talk about those?
Yeah. Excuse me?
Can you talk about the deaths, or is it too is that, you know, private?
They were related to you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's personal. They were two of them were related to me. Yeah.
Okay.
One died on a couch I took a nap on.
Yeah. Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah, no problem.
There was a previous owner of the home, and then two of my relatives died in the home.
Mm-hmm.
So was one of your relatives Jimmy?
Yeah.
Okay. You think he was the one
yeah,
who was the head honcho?
No, there was there was a voice that I didn't recognize.
Sounded more.
He came through very, very clear all the time, and he came through very, very, as a matter of fact, and very, very demanding, condescending, like he, what he said goes. He would give commands.
Oh, okay.
We would catch EVPs of him telling them to be quiet, to stop growling, whatever that means. And then the quieter EVPs, or the ones that we caught as whispers, would always be, there'd be different voices, but they would say things like, he's coming, or, I can't remember exactly. We've got 100 of them, but it gave us the impression over the months and months and months that we went back and investigated this place that there was one particular guy who sort of controlled the rest of them.
Well, it seems like you guys had a pretty good, like, well-working group, and you worked well together, and you seem to get a lot of evidence together. Where would you like to see the future path of your group and the future of the paranormal field be headed?
Well, I mean, I think the reason we do this is to help people, number one, first and foremost, to help people that have paranormal problems that don't understand, or maybe think they have paranormal problems and really don't, but that's our number one goal now, is to help people. I don't know, we want to promote the paranormal field, I mean,
exactly.
In
the right way.
Yeah, through camaraderie and sharing ideas and evidence and things like that. And I hope the paranormal field is going in that direction. A lot of groups are competitive or territorial or, you know, something of that nature. I don't understand that myself, but I mean, the reason Tim and I formed this group was, you know, to help families, to help individuals. I have a special place in my heart for kids that are scared because, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, you know, I was scared, so I can relate to them, you know. And whenever I can help, whenever we get a case with that a child's involved, you know, that's
first priority.
Yeah, it's first priority, and it's dear to my heart. And the first thing I want to do is comfort that child and say, look, you know, tell them what I've been through, and what, you know, what I saw, what I have experienced, and to ease their mind, you know, a lot of times, and to make them understand that you know, it's not necessarily a scary thing, you know.
Right.
It's mainly to educate people. I think that's where the field needs to go. Educate the public on what we do, and, you know, it's not like we're all strange and we're all weird and stuff like that.
Well, we are, Tim, but...
Well, I'm a little weird, yeah, but we all are. But that's where I would like to see this field go, is more of public education of what we do.
More public education, less Hollywood, and instead of... Yeah. Okay.
I'm a man of few words, so if I just speak a few words...
Hey, those few words spoke many, sir.
In recent years, I think, you know, at least since, you know, 2004 when Ghost Hunters first aired, you know, I think the public's more open and more familiar. But it's gone on so long now that, you know, a lot of the public thinks that's what, you know, paranormal investigators do. They don't realize that, you know, for television, things are very much abbreviated and not exactly as it is in reality.
Yeah.
It's not quite that easy to go out and get EVPs every time you do an investigation, because
right.
That doesn't happen.
Right.
Yeah. I like to compare it to a fishing show, how you, like, every time they throw a cast in, they get a fish. Yeah, they don't show
right.
The 8 hours or whatever they're sitting there doing nothing, not catching anything.
Exactly.
They show when they get the fish.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. I think I do when I watch. I know y'all are familiar with Ghost Adventures with Zach, Nick, and Aaron. They do sometimes, you know, at least relay on the show how long they'll be there. You know, we'll go for 45 minutes and there was no response on the SB7 or something like that. So,
yeah.
But I don't think people grasp it, though.
No, because it's an hour-long show, and you just can't put it in perspective. There all the stuff that goes into it, like an hour, into 1 hour.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You could say 45 minutes, but unless you're like sitting there in the dark for 45 minutes, you don't know what it's
right.
like. You know.
Right.
Don't remember what I was going to say. So what are some of the locations you guys have been to?
Well, as far as private residences, we've been all over. Some of the more popular, I mean, the historical locations here, we've been to, start on the Virginia Beach. We've been to the Ferry Plantation House.
My mom wants me to go there.
Yeah.
It's an awesome place.
I'll tell you something about the Ferry Plantation House that a lot of people may not know. There's a lot more scarier places out there and creepy places, but we've been there at least twice, haven't we?
Twice, yeah.
It, with this group, and it is one of the most active locations that I've ever been to. I mean, not scary stuff, just stuff happening.
Footsteps, voices.
All the time. Voices, footsteps, shadows, you get EVPs. It's a constant, all night, you're getting something. You're never bored. You're never sitting around for 45 minutes without something happening.
Right.
It's very, very active for some reason.
Is it active for everyone? Is it active for all people who go there, or is it just you guys?
I'm not sure.
People,
I mean,
going there and not getting anything?
No, I mean...
Majority of the groups.
Yeah, majority of the people I know that have been there have gotten evidence. I mean, I don't know how it compares to where they've been, but we've been to a lot of places. I mean, and I've been doing this a long time, and it's a very, very active place. I mean, we've been to in Newport News here. We've been to Enview Plantation. We've been to Lee Hall Mansion, the Boxwood Inn. We've been
the place up in Lancaster.
Yeah, the Lancaster Tavern in Lancaster, Virginia. We've been to St. Albans several times. In Radford, Virginia.
Been to Poe Museum.
The Poe Museum.
Bird Theater.
Bird Theater in Richmond. That's a beautiful place.
And hundreds of private residences.
Yeah.
We do a lot of private places.
Yeah.
What I like to do myself is find a place that's not known to be haunted and just call them and ask them to investigate it. Now, that's where you usually don't, how are you going to know it's active unless you go? I mean,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I really like to do is go to places that no one's ever been.
We've been to the Smithfield, the museum.
Smithfield Museum, Boykins Tavern.
Yeah, Boykins.
A lot of the Civil War forts over there, Alawite County.
Yeah, a lot of places.
That's my personal favorite is historical areas.
I was going to say, can you guys talk about what your favorite EVPs you've gotten have been, like from any player?
Well, Tim and I together, we want to tell them about St. Albans. We were walking around.
Yeah, that was the best one, I think. Yeah.
We were walking around. We were at St. Albans for 2 days, and the Friday, Saturday, I guess, afternoon, we investigated Friday night. We had gone back to the hotel and slept for a little while, and we came back and. Tim and I were there alone during the day.
About 4 p.m., I guess.
Yeah, it was about 4 in the afternoon. It was still daylight. It was during the summer, so there was still plenty of light outside. And we're just walking around the building. I mean, just walking, you know, we walked the entire 68,000-plus square feet. And at one point we were upstairs, and we were looking at the old sprinkler system or something, and Tim had a record. Tim always has his recorder going, which is good. And we were talking about the sprinkler system and how it probably doesn't work anymore and blah, blah, blah. And this voice, while Tim and I were actually talking over each other, there was a third voice that came through that said, "Look behind you." And
really clear, too.
Really clear. I think that one, I got that one posted on the website.
And that one that we did in Gloucester County, Virginia, where it was through the SB7, it was two spirits talking to each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And one said, they said, "Can you hear us?" And they said, "They can't hear us."
Yeah, it was...
like two spirits talking to each other about us.
Right. The one female, there was two female entities we caught, two different female voices, and one says to the other, "Who are these people?" And the other one says, "I think they can hear us."
Right.
Wow. Where was this one?
Was that in Gloucester
County?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it a private residence in Gloucester? Yeah. A very, very old house. I think it was built in early mid 1800s.
There for about a month straight, every place we went to, I got an EVP that said it was going to kill Scott.
yeah. I think the same entity was following me from one investigation to another, because every time my name was mentioned, it was like, "Kill him."
It said, "Kill Scott."
Or, "Kill Scott," or, "I'll kill you." When I'd ask a question, it says, "I'll kill," you know, it was like, I mean, this was like at least five investigations
in a row. I thought it was something.
Damn,
else
man,
who'd
you piss on?
I don't know, man.
But I think it was something that was following him around. Something was attached to him or something.
Sounds like it.
Something
yeah.
he pissed off somewhere.
I thought it was rather humorous, actually. But
did you finally get rid of it? Or did he still come up and say
nice.
Still Scott whenever you do EVP session?
About a month or so, and then I haven't had one since then.
Yeah, it went on for a while, and it was really creepy because Tim would be like, "Hey man, I got another EVP. It's gonna kill you." I'm like, "What?" And then the next investigation, you know, "Kill Scott," and it's like, "What do they got against me? What's going on?" You know.
Yeah.
But it went on for a while, and then just stopped. You know, I haven't had any lately. That we've gotten.
Do you
didn't
feel any
my
differently?
Name a lot,
you didn't feel any like weird feelings and stuff? All it was the EVP.
Yeah, it was just the EVP. I don't feel much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to say that. That sounds kind of bad. I'm not sensitive to that kind of thing. So, and I don't, you know, I'm not. I hate to say this because as soon as I say this, I'll go somewhere and something will scare the living hell out of me, but I don't get scared. I don't get scared. Yeah, I'm not really scared of anything. You know, I can I can go by myself anywhere, any place, doesn't matter. I don't get scared. If I get more excited than anything, if I see something or hear something or, you know, something's going on, I get more excited than anything. A lot of people can't comprehend that. Oh, don't you get scared? I'm like, nah, not anymore. I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years. It doesn't bother me anymore. But, I didn't feel anything when we got the EVPs, or I thought it was, like I said, I thought it was kind of humorous when we listened to them back as another Kill Scott. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, great.
I guess that's the thing. I guess if you hear it back when you're sitting at your evidence review, but, I mean, if I heard Kill Ryan, out loud at the place, that might scare the crap out of
me. Yeah.
I might have to excuse myself. To get a chance to dance, because I would be like, holy crap.
I think that the spirits, when you're conducting EVPs, I think they know what you're doing. Because I've had them say, sometimes, so many times they said, Tim. It says Tim, and then they'll say something afterwards. Maybe it's because I'm the one that they see, you know, with the recorders or trying to talk to them. I don't know. It's so much, so strange, but I've had that happen, I mean, hundreds of times over the years.
Now, you said that you like to go check out places that haven't been investigated yet. Do you think you get better evidence there than you do at places like St. Albans or Ferry Plantation or whatever?
I think so. I think so because they, like the place we went in, where was it, Lancaster, Virginia?
Mm-hmm.
We went a couple weeks ago, and no one's ever investigated there. We didn't get a lot of evidence there, but what we did get was really good, clear EVP. So I think that when you go to a new place, they don't know what you're doing. I really think that a spirit is smart enough that they know what you're doing and they get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really believe that. Now, after they see the same old, you know, guys running up and down the halls, like at St. Albans, how many groups go there, you know? They're probably like,
yeah,
here comes
almost,
another one.
It's like a sports attraction, you know, like almost like you teach spirits like animals at the zoo. Come see the spirit.
Right.
Don't tap the glass.
Right,
you know?
Right, exactly.
But this place, we got some really good ones. I mean, you know, one said, when we was walking, it said welcome, like it was welcoming us. So that was pretty cool. We actually got some good SB7 responses, too.
Yeah,
they're probably
excited
about people finally talking to them, you know?
Right.
When we were setting up, I'd gone upstairs to move a camera from one room to another, and a female voice said hello to me. And it was a loud whisper. It wasn't a voice. It was a whisper, a loud whisper.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was Sarah or Allie, one of the two girls on our team. And so I was like, hello, and I went and walked around upstairs and looked down the steps and didn't see anybody. But that was something I heard, you know, audibly that was pretty loud, pretty clear. And it was definitely I guess disembodied voice, because there was nobody up there with me.
That was the same room where I got the good EVP later that day.
Mm-hmm.
So how many people are actually in your group?
Yeah, there's nine at the present time. There's nine now. We just welcomed two new members recently, and the reason we did was because a lot of times we investigate places. We have a lot of equipment, and we like to have somebody. We like to have enough to cover it and have somebody on the monitors at all times. Enough people to be able to set up and break down and to get a variety of different, I guess.
We like to do live review also. We like to review evidence right on site.
Right, yeah.
That's smart.
We'll review evidence immediately. So that way, you know, we can get clues to, you know, as to where to go, you know, and what to do, what to say, what to ask, and things like that. So, but, you know, a lot of times, you know, people have lives and people have things to do, so, you know, in jobs and things. So if we get quite busy sometimes, and we'll have an investigation one weekend, you know, two or three weekends in a row, and not everybody can make it to every investigation. So we want to have enough people that if, you know, two or three of us can't go or something comes up or they've got a family matter or work or whatever, that we have enough people to cover what we need, so.
That's smart. We're trying to do that, too, with our group, just to make sure we have all our bases covered.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the age range of, like, what's from?
20 to 58.
So it's
our
nice,
youngest
nice.
Member's 20, and the oldest is 58.
Oh, nice wide spectrum. So you get both ends. You get the younger point of view and the older point of view. And you guys,
right.
Yeah,
that's cool.
I think that's very important, especially age and also male and female opinions are a lot is different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And spirit reacts different to sometimes, you know,
and different
to
sensitivities
females
as
males.
Well. You know.
Yeah.
What kind of equipment are you guys using? What do you like to use personally, I guess?
I love the SP7 Spirit Box. I mean,
that's Timmy's favorite.
A lot of people don't believe in it, but I've heard some things come through that you could never explain, man. And if it's coming over, you know, 10 to 15, you know, cycle scans through there, and it's a clear sentence.
Oh, man. Ryan knows what I'm about to say. We got a direct response over the Spirit Box, and I've never heard anything like this. It was at Mount Mulatto at Henricus. And when I asked, what do you think of Ryan? Someone responds, fuck him.
Oh, yeah.
Clear as fucking day, man.
I wear that with a black and on.
We got a lot of folks that night.
Yeah, wow, that's interesting. So, I mean, where would that come from? I mean, like a random radio station is going to be saying, you know, fuck you, right at the right as soon as the thing is scanning. I just don't find that. I can't believe that, you know.
No, that would be like that would be like seeing Santa Claus and Easter Bunny in the same room. You know,
right.
It's just
right.
Been
exactly.
What I look for in SP7 is if you notice when it's scanning, if you'll hear it, it almost like it stops scanning. You'll hear a voice come through.
Yeah, we've had that happen. Have y'all ever had that happen where it'll actually the static will go silent and the voice will come through and then it will start scanning again?
Yeah,
I think we've
had that
before.
I know what you're talking about.
If you get one of those, that's definitely a response. I mean, we've got some of the best ones when it's did that.
And it's like the energy. It's like I don't know. I can't explain it, but it really is weird, and it doesn't do it all the time. But it'll be scanning, you know, noisy. I think the thing's annoying and noisy. That's my opinion of it. But it'll actually be scanning through stations, and you'll ask it a question, and all of a sudden it'll go quiet, and then you'll hear the voice come through, and then it will start scanning again. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely not a radio station because it's a direct response. You know, it's not, you know.
I mean, I've had to ask the question. I've asked questions, you know, like on SB7, like, did you do this? And it'll stop scanning and said, I did. I mean, how is that a radio station?
Yeah, isn't it hard to get like three or four words in a row when you do an SB7 box anyways? Because it's
right.
Going so fast. You know, it's got, it can't be a radio station because you go to different stations like, you know, like every second or something, a new radio station's coming on.
Yeah, every five or so a second. Yeah.
And it's scanning that fast and backwards.
Yeah.
You know? So
if it's a radio station, they'd be talking backwards?
Yeah. I mean, I use FM reverse. That's what I always use, you know, on the 100 speed. That's what I've always used. And it seemed like I try to do whatever I can to make it be less critical. But if you scan backwards at the fastest speed, it's got to be something that comes through that fast, you know? I can't understand a radio. How's a radio station scanning that fast backwards going to say something like, you know, fuck you, Tim? I mean, how is that going to happen?
Yeah, if it was,
I just don't
yeah,
see
yeah,
that
exactly.
Happen.
What do
I'm
you guys
just a very
think
big...
of like simple equipment modified to meet paranormal stuff? Like, I'm sure you know of the Shack Hack, the Radio Shack, AMFM digital radios.
Yeah.
Modified
yeah.
As a spirit box. What do you think of that kind of stuff?
Well, it's like we were talking about earlier. The scan, you know, as long as it's scanning at a speed that's
fast,
right? That it can't be a radio station. Well, of course, you know, one word responses I'm kind of skeptical of anyway, but because radio stations bleed, so you can scan two frequencies. And get the same word over those two frequencies, and it still be a radio station. So, it's less convincing to me if it's slower scan. You know, it could be coincidental, more coincidental.
See, the old
yeah.
hack shacks,
yeah.
they only scan forward. They wouldn't scan backwards, and they scanned a lot slower. So it was a lot more easy for a radio station to come through than it is with the new SB7s.
Yeah. I started when, you know, stuff was old school anyway, using compasses and, you know, tape recorders and mini tape recorders.
I still do the mini tape recorders.
Yeah.
And my camera is a cassette, like, it's not a digital camera. It's a cassette camera.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sometimes that equipment, it picks up very well. I mean, the thing about the older stuff is it's harder to review, you know, a cassette tape than it is a digital recorder, because you can, you know, a digital recorder, of course, you can fast forward, rewind, replay, download it on your computer, whatever. You know, if you got a cassette tape in an old style tape recorder, it's a little bit more, takes a little bit more time to review and things.
A little more hands on.
Right, yeah.
I do love the new Tascon recorders, too. You guys use those?
I'm sorry, what did you say? I didn't hear you.
The new Tascon recorders? You ever heard of those?
No, I haven't heard of it. Heard of them. Have you heard of them, Amber?
They're the ones with the directional microphones on top.
That's what Dennis
said. Oh, yeah. That's Dennis, you said.
Those are awesome, man. You can... Now, you know, back in the day, you remember you had the old cheap recorders, you'd have to go in and filter all the noise out, then review it. This thing, man, is so crystal clear.
You can hear a flea picking its frickin' nose.
Oh,
yeah.
I was going through Dennis's evidence from Bell Nemus, and it's
right.
crystal. It was great. I mean, it was,
right.
it's, hear people talking in the next room, it sounded like they were right there next to the recorder.
Right.
Yeah,
I love them, man. That's all, you know, we use that pretty much all the time, though.
Yeah, right now we have an 8-channel DVR. It's just, it's infrared. We're going to, I'm really into the different spectrums of light, you know, full spectrum.
Uh-huh.
So I have some full spectrum cameras, video and still cameras, and eventually we're going to go to, you know, not just infrared, but full spectrum on our DVR too. So that's something we want to do to improve.
That'll definitely help. That's for sure.
Have you guys had any luck using the Ovilus?
We've gotten a few. Interesting responses at the Mount Milady Hospital in Henricus. A few random words.
Yeah, like metal.
Metal.
Yeah. I have a lot of piercings in my face, and it came up with metal while I was talking.
Hey, maybe that's what it meant.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah, the thing I
wrote down will be caught, but I can't find it right now.
Yeah, the Ovilus, I think when it's on, when it's working, you can definitely tell it's working. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. It doesn't. We don't get a lot of. Because I'm thinking, you know, with the obelisk, you know, does a spirit really know how to manipulate it? How does a mm-hmm. spirit know how to manipulate that device to get it to say what it wants it to say?
Yeah.
I know in a lot of reading and even watching on television. And I hate to refer to watching on television, but a lot of cases I've researched, you know, a lot of times the obelisk is most active when there is allegedly an inhuman entity present.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when there's an inhuman entity supposedly at a location, the obelisk is really a lot more active. And that would make sense because something inhuman, like a demon or whatever you want to call it, is more likely to be intelligent enough to be able to manipulate that piece of equipment, I guess.
It's interesting. We during our investigation at Henricus, there was a loud crash. We were all running around trying to figure out what had happened, and we left the obelisk going. And I was listening, and I left my recorder going in the hospital where it was. And while we were gone, the obelisk went off like 3 or 4 times while we're gone, saying these random things.
I think one of the words it says was outside.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So on another note, why don't you guys tell us about the event coming up?
Oh, yes.
The Paracon at the Boxwood Inn?
Yes,
yes sir.
It's April 19th. Of course, it's open to the public. It's from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. that Saturday. We're going to have several groups from all over the state and a couple from out of state there. We're going to have a movie company. Actually, Chelsea Rain wrote a trilogy, and they're making movies from that trilogy. They're going to be there, the cast and crew.
Cool.
We're going to have Pat Broussard, who is a psychic medium. She's also a photographer and author.
She's going to be doing psychic readings.
She's going to be doing readings there, yeah. And she's written a couple books. She's in the middle of writing another book now. She's going to have her books there for sale. Pamela Kenny is an author and actress. She's going to be there.
Mike.
Mike Moore, J. Michael Moore. He is a local historian. And he's written a few books too. He's going to be there with his books. All of them are going to speak as well. And then of course, you know, Twisted Paranormal, All Seeing Paranormal Society, and the Sisters of Salem are all going to have speaking slots too. They're going to speak on different subjects. The Boxwood Inn is going to, you know, provide the food and everything for purchase, and Chef Josh, who works at the Boxwood, he is an excellent chef. He can fix you a hot dog or a cheese sandwich, and it's the best hot dog or cheese sandwich you've ever eaten in your life, man.
He's one of them kind of guys.
Yeah, but he's a very, very good chef.
Good people. They're all good people.
Yeah, very good people. We have the Animal Aid Society from Hampton. They're a no-kill animal shelter. They're going to be out there with a couple of dogs, and some of our proceeds are going to go to them.
Aww.
And,
that's great, man. That is awesome.
Papa Doc. Okay. Some of our proceeds are going to go to a local guy who was he's a cancer survivor. He's got a lot of bills that have piled up over the time because he was denied insurance, right? And so we're going to some of our proceeds from this are going to go or be donated to him to help him with his bills. So. And, of course, a lot of the proceeds, that you know, from the stuff, the food and everything you purchase will go towards the Boxwood Inn. It's if any of y'all are familiar with the Exchange Hotel, it's about the same size, same style.
Yeah.
It's got a train depot next door. It's sitting right in front of the railroad tracks. It's like a deja vu thing there.
Yeah.
But
so what,
it's just here in Newport News.
What made you guys decide to do a Paracon? What made you?
Well, me personally, I've wanted to do one for a long time, and the main reason is paranormal unity, to get all the groups together, to get to know people from the other groups, to get to let, you know, the groups around the whatever area be able to, you know, talk shop and compare notes and ideas and get to know each other. Because, you know, no matter how long you've been doing it, there's always something that you can learn. You know, I learned something, just the weirdest thing. Somebody will say, oh, yeah, we did this. And I'm like, man, I never even thought of doing that, you know.
Yeah, that's.
So it's a learning thing. It's a camaraderie thing. It's, you know, to get everybody together
to bring people together.
Yeah.
Unity. It's instead of, you know, spending so much time talking about everybody, and it's, why not spend more time trying to get to know each other? You know?
Yeah,
exactly.
That's why we decided to do this.
And you know, a lot of groups out in central western Virginia have been to places that I've never even heard of. They're like, oh, we went to this,
mm-hmm.
you know, something mine or whatever. I'm like, I've never even heard of that, you know. And
mm-hmm.
you know, it gives, you know, there's a lot of reasons to have a Paracon, and wanting to always, you know, for a long time wanting to do it. And the last group I was with, you know, I tried to push it, you know, hey, let's do something, let's do an event, get everybody together, and they kind of weren't with it, so, you know, I let it go for a while. But when Tim and I got together, you know, I said, hey, man, we got to do something, get people in this area too, because a lot of, I mean, this area really is full of history. I mean, with Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown, it's full of history.
I absolutely love it. I love going down in that that area.
Yeah.
Where you guys are.
So, yeah, we wanted to support, you know, get maybe the groups out in areas of Virginia, North Carolina, wherever, that to, you know, hey, come on out to Eastern Virginia and check us out. And when I went to, we went to the Paracon at the Exchange that Angel, you know, May put on,
mm-hmm.
That was back in September, and that kind of inspired me. Yeah, right. We saw you there, and that kind of inspired me, because I liked the intimacy of it, and it wasn't a big production. It wasn't a whole lot of celebrities there. If you go to, you know, a Scare Fest or something like that, that's big, which are nice. I mean, I love going to those events and stuff, but of course,
but
you know,
more,
we can't.
It's more comfortable, more like, I don't know, we're close, I guess.
Yeah, it's more intimate. It's more local,
yeah.
And get the, you know,
more intimate.
Get the Virginia.
We're not thinking of, not close.
Yeah.
Well, I like the fact that you have the Paracon. We don't have to wait until September to have another Paracon. We have one right in the middle. So that's really cool. I really certainly appreciate you putting it together.
Well, we appreciate, you know, y'all willing to come and stuff.
We just we hope to, you know, I hope it does what we want it to do. You know, like bring people together, man. That's the main thing, to get everybody in the field to work together and educate everybody about what we all do. You know, and not try to you know, because there's so many groups
people together
that talk about each other
stories
and this and that.
And
right.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you know, I hope we can advertise enough for a lot of the public to come, so that the public can actually meet real paranormal investigators, people that,
mm-hmm.
you know, somebody other than what they see on TV, and they can talk to them, you know, learn about the equipment, learn about what we do, and, you know, on an intimate level, a personal level, and
what kind of advertising are you using to get the word out?
Well, Facebook, number one, our website, and we're probably before the end of this month, we'll be, you know, in contact with local, you know, television and newspaper and stuff, and hopefully they'll boost us a little bit, give us a little plug here and there. But Angel May really inspired us. She I liked the way, you know, she put the Paracon at the exchange on, and I was like, this is perfect. You know, this is just the right atmosphere and everything. So we kind of modeled it after what she did.
She definitely set a precedent, that's for sure. She does such a great job. I think it's just going to get better and better each year, just like hers is. It's going to
get.
We appreciate that.
We appreciate it.
We really like
problem.
Angel a lot.
No.
She's cool.
And after the Paracon that evening, there's going to be a dinner. It's a kind of not a formal dinner. You don't have to dress up for it or anything, but it's going to be a sit down dinner and a paranormal investigation. There are 15 slots available. Well, there's less than that now. A few have been sold so far, but it's going to be a sit down dinner. Chef Josh is going to fix. I don't know what the menu is yet, but. Believe me, whatever it is, it's going to be good. And he's going to fix a sit-down dinner. It's a salad, a main course, a dessert, and everything. And
drinks.
And then there's going to be a paranormal investigation of the Boxwood afterwards. From 9 p.m. to 2 a.m.
It just keeps getting better, man.
Yeah.
I can't wait for people to get here.
Those tickets for the dinner and investigation, they're $45 a piece, and there's only 15 slots available, and I know that at least four of those are gone. No, I haven't asked her lately.
You know, that's
so about what is the cost on that?
Excuse me?
About what is the cost on that?
It's $45 a person.
Okay.
And that, like I said, includes the dinner and the investigation. From 9 until 2.
That's going to the Boxwood and also to the animal shelters. And
right. Some of the proceeds from that will also be donated to the animal shelter and to Paul for his cancer and stuff like that.
I do have one quick question, since we're kind of on the subject of the unity between the paranormal group and bringing together the Paracon. Outside of Paracon events and what we did with the exchange and what we're doing now with the Boxwood, with everybody pitching in and doing the investigations, what do you feel about other groups kind of commingling and going on investigations together and stuff like that?
Well, I'm all for that. Because like you say, you know, sometimes, you know, you get into a – you investigate with the same people all the time, you kind of get in a rut of how you do things, and, I always learn something new when I investigate with somebody else that's experienced and, that watching them try different things, and so I enjoy that myself. I think that's a good idea.
I do, too.
Because, it broadens your horizons, most definitely.
You learn a lot from other people. You'd be surprised.
Definitely. I'm kind of new. My name's Kristen. I'm just somewhat newest member. And I've noticed that after the exchange, we've done a couple of investigations with different groups. What groups have you guys kind of coincided with?
She said, what groups have we worked with?
Well, we're going to work some with Tidewater Paranormal, and we're planning on doing some work with a group called RTL Paranormal. They're a local group. There's some friends of ours in this area. We don't have any definite plans with any other groups, but, you know, we're willing to, you know, work, you know, with anyone.
Okay. And kind of shifting back to Paracon, I'm sorry, my brain's kind of jumbled.
That's okay.
Do you guys have any flyers or stuff that you want to put out? Because if you can email me a copy of it, I can print some up and put some out in, like, the Richmond, Goochland area.
Awesome.
Yeah, awesome. That'd be awesome. Yes, we do have flyers. We have the general flyer, then we have a flyer with all the speakers, and then we have the flyer about the investigation and dinner afterwards. So, yeah, that'd be awesome. We'd really appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get those to you. That'd be great.
I'm trying to think how you would get my email.
they've got you on the same chat in Facebook, hon.
Yeah, we're on Facebook. We're all over Facebook. So you can send it to, send your email to me on my personal page or the Seven Cities Paranormal page or Tim's page or, yeah.
Send it to Tim at sevencitiesparanormal.com.
Yeah, or Scott at sevencitiesparanormal.com. Yeah.
Okay.
That's our email address.
I did get a note from one of our group members. She said the entity with three fingers and the yellow eyes was pure evil manifesting itself. She saw lots of evil entities as a kid and wanted to let you guys know.
Yeah. I don't like to label things, but we assume that the entity that we described with the three fingers and the yellow eyes, it did follow two of our investigators home. And I don't mean at the same time. It followed one investigator home. That investigator went and visited another investigator, and then that investigator had a run-in with it at his home in, later nights. We figured it probably wasn't it's not a very pleasant thing.
I'm still here. I don't know about Andy and Ryan.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe we'd lost you.
I don't know where they're not talking. That's kind of...
I'm here. Sorry.
I don't talk for you. Okay.
My cheek pushed the mute button on my phone, so I'm here talking to myself. my bad. Have you guys ever actually investigated the Boxwood Inn?
Yes, many times.
Yeah, that was one of my first investigations as a group. I mean, I've been going to there since the early 2000s, probably.
You guys got some good stuff out there?
Yeah, I identified two spirits there. One of them was the old owner of the house and his wife. I've got numerous EVPs, ghost box responses from them.
What made you decide to use the Boxwood Inn as a place for your paracalling?
Because we're such good friends with the owners, and I just couldn't really think of any place else to do it. It's such a beautiful historical house, and
mm-hmm.
That was our first choice.
Yeah, they're a bed and breakfast. They do a lot of weddings. They do a lot of events, and she's set up to do that and familiar with that, and there's it was the perfect venue around here.
Got lots of space and
right, lots of space outside and inside, and it's privately owned, so a lot of the historical places in this area are not privately owned, and sometimes the municipalities or whatever are not too keen on the paranormal.
Uh-huh.
It's surprising because I think, I really believe that this is probably one of the most historical places in the country, with Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown, Fort Monroe. I mean, there's so much history and so much, and there's so many stories that people have witnessed things and seen things and heard things. And being it's all, you know, public, it's owned by the you know, the state or the or national parks or whatever. They're kind of like just a general no, you know. No, you can't investigate, no.
They don't want to be anywhere involved with the paranormal.
Right.
No, yeah, that's weird.
Not what we want.
You think that would drum up like curiosity? People would be more interested in going out to those places if they knew it was haunted.
Right. And the funny thing is, Williamsburg in particular, they have had several private companies do, you know, ghost walks or ghost tours around Williamsburg.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think the city of Williamsburg has started their own ghost tour now, even though they're totally against it. I know a lot of it has to do with insurance, and a lot of the things that are in the haunted houses in Williamsburg and in Jamestown are priceless items, and they don't want anything broken. They don't want anything, you know, any accidents to happen, and I understand all that, too.
You can understand. I can understand that, not wanting to give ghost tours, I guess, of the houses. But, I mean, as far as, like, walking around outside and, you know, say, here, this is where, you know, so such and such happened, and then walking by the house, I guess. Good way to drum up some, you know, tourism.
Yeah.
Well, Kathy, that's the owner of the Boxwood Inn, she embraces it. She's like, since we've been did investigations there, her business has tripled.
Yeah. People
she'll
are always
ask,
paranormal.
They'll say, they'll ask her if it's haunted, and she says, do you want it to be? So, and then, you know, she embraces it. I mean, she tells people what we catch there. She knows the names of the spirits there. And, you know, she embraces it. I mean, she's one of the few that does that, but it's great.
That's cool. I mean, you can tell a good story. You can get people to come back, and they can tell. You know, tell their friends about it, and then they'll be like, oh, yeah, I went here. I went to this haunted location. It's really cool. I went on a tour there. You know?
Yeah.
But you guys will be there. Once you get out there, you won't want to leave because they're so nice. It's like going to your grandma's house.
That's how I felt about the exchange, man. I went out there. God, for first time I went out there was in June of last year. Never been there before in my life. I've been there back like six times since.
Right.
It just keeps calling me back.
There a couple times.
So now I got the box. He's going to start calling me back too. Yeah.
you'll love it
my
out
car.
There, man. Yeah. Yeah. It's
really
awesome out there.
I have to leave. But I really hate to do this, but I have to leave.
Okay.
It was nice talking to you guys from Seven Cities. I will definitely
nice talking
see you guys
too.
At Paracon.
Yeah, we're looking
awesome.
Forward to seeing you guys.
Oh, definitely.
And we really appreciate y'all having us on.
Well, just Kristen's leaving. Oh. Not everybody.
Yeah, it's just me. Everybody else
just
will be there.
We're still here.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to cut off early, but I'm just saying goodbye to everybody.
All right, that's cool.
Thanks.
Good to talk to you.
Good night. So, yeah, I mean, that's cool. You picked that place. I like places like that, nice and comfortable. Nice, comfortable places. Like you said, it's like going to my grandma's house.
Yeah, man. It's just like it. The food.
Yeah,
I love
going to
my grandma's
house.
So that's awesome.
This place is huge, man. It once was the post office. It has a general store inside of it. It has, eight, 10 rooms or something?
Yeah, there's...
It's just huge.
Yeah, there's four, I think, rooms out for bed and breakfast, yeah.
So was it it was an actual house or was it a post office?
Well, it was...
It was like a hotel
Simon
or
Curtis,
something?
He was... Yeah, Simon Curtis, he pretty much started, I guess, what's Newport News now, Warwick County.
He was very, very rich.
He was rich. He started the first general store was located in this building, the first
post office.
He actually started the first car dealership in Newport News, well, Warwick County at the time, and first grocery store, first everything, I mean, pretty much, he started. And it, this was his house, his residence. But the general store and the post office and everything were, you know, built into his residence.
Okay.
So, yeah. And like I say, it's in size comparison, it's about the same, maybe a little bigger than the Exchange.
Maybe a little bigger. Yeah.
As far as the house itself, the land area is probably about the same.
Cool.
It's just not out in the country.
They almost tore it down once to build a Burger King.
Oh, that would have been awful. I mean,
man. They saved it from getting it burned down. It was a dream. She had a son that passed away, and it was his dream to open this as a bed and breakfast. So they did it as a family, like as a tribute to him.
Wow, that is cool.
And they almost tore it down and built a Burger King, man. It was really, really close.
Yeah.
That would have been.
It would be a shame
if that had happened.
Yeah.
Man, well, I'm glad that didn't happen.
Right, me too.
Mm. Yeah, it's you don't realize, you know, I look at that place every time I go there, and you know, I look at my house and I know what it takes to keep, you know, my house up, and the Boxwood Inn is like, what, at least 4 or 5 times the size of my house.
Derek does it all himself.
Right, and I can imagine the upkeep and everything, and to save a building like that is a good thing to do.
Oh yeah, too many historic locations are being torn down in the name of progress. Just because some of the famous inns sleep there doesn't mean it's not historically significant.
Right.
You know, a lot of old houses have stories to tell.
Right. It was used, I remember, during it's real close to Fort Eustis Army Base, and during World War II, a lot of the generals used to stay there. You know, when they'd come in, they'd rest and, you know, relax there.
Yeah.
They'd stay in the room there. It was built in 1896.
Okay, so it's got some years on it.
Yeah.
Well, can you tell me the name of the groups that are going to be there again? For their harvest?
Some of the groups, yeah, I got a list over here somewhere, but Twisted Paranormal Society, All Seeing Paranormal Society, of course, y'all are going to be there. Hold that here, Jimmy. Let's see, I knew you were going to ask me that, and that's why I had the list, and now I can't find it. All right, well.
Can't make it easy on you, can I?
Nah, I'll tell you. RTL Paranormal, Middle Peninsula Paranormal Investigators. Let's see. Tidewater Paranormal. Okay. I should just have the picture of the back of the T-shirt and it has all of them listed on there. Sisters of Salem, going to be there.
We get T-shirts each.
Yeah, Mystic Paranormal. The Ferry Plantation House is also going to be there. They've purchased a booth there. So they got on the T-shirts.
There's a group from New Jersey coming.
Pinelands Paranormal.
They're from New Jersey.
All the way from New Jersey.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know I'm forgetting people. And I said that, you know, Chelsea Rain and the cast and crew of the movies they're filming are going to be there. They're vampires, vampire movie type thing.
Uh-huh.
See, I don't have a picture of the back of the T-shirt, so I don't know the whole list. Yeah, I didn't put it on there.
It's still a pretty good group. You got like a whole wide array of people coming. That's great.
It's 13 or 14, I think, now, at last count.
Yeah, we're not stopping, so any groups out there that's listening, if you guys want to come, we got plenty of space.
Yeah, we got plenty of space. It's $25 for a 10x10 space. We'll have power out there if you want to, you know, run your DVR or whatever. And I know we've got a lot of tables. So I know if some people don't want to travel with tables, we got a lot of tables. We just don't have the easy ups or the tarps or the tents or whatever. You have to bring your own if you want to be protected from the elements.
So we think we would love to be able to broadcast our show from the Paracon. Maybe
awesome.
Interviews. Maybe do some interviews out there.
That'd be cool,
yeah. Yeah, it'll be a good group there to pull from and stuff. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, I think that would be fun to be able to get people from all walks of life and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely.
We'll make sure you guys get all the power and stuff you need. Just let us know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Me and Scott will be running around like little chickens that day, I'm sure. So you see two bald guys running around, find one of us.
Well, I remember seeing Angel running around Paracon when we were there last year. So I know what it's like. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But we're getting towards the end of our show. And this is the time to ask you, besides Paracon, do you have anything else coming up? You guys want to talk about any investigations you got coming up?
Well, we've got a couple in the books. We've got one this coming weekend, an investigation at a private residence in Suffolk. And this guy is a friend of mine, a real nice guy. He used to be an investigator himself, and he's lived in a couple of haunted places, and he moved into a house recently that it's got, you know, some activity going on. He's just kind of curious about, you know, what we could find out, you know, by doing an investigation there, since, you know, he doesn't do it himself anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be interesting. But I mean, other than, you know, a few private residence cases, you know, we've been working on this Paracon, trying to get it together, and that's taken up, you know, most of our time.
Once we get into May, we're going to get full swing with some bigger investigations. So I know a lot of residentials, because we're trying to keep it small because we're so busy planning for Paracon.
Yeah. We have plans to go back to St. Albans in May.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of the members on our team have never been there. So that'll be pretty interesting for them.
We'll try to get to South Pittsburgh Hospital in Tennessee this year. We want to go there.
Ooh, that'd
be
fun. That'd be interesting.
So I mean, as far we've got dreams and trying to plan some stuff, but as far as, you know, anything, you know, big definitely planned other than St. Albans in May, you know, we've been busy with the Paracon, so and trying to, you know, keep up with our cases as well.
Yeah. I can see how Paracon will take up most of your time trying to plan something like that, because that's a pretty big deal. Trying to plan that.
And
we're
so excited about it. So that's,
yeah, we just want it to be, you know, we want it to be what everybody expects it to be, and just hope it, you know, hope everybody enjoys themselves. And if there's anything, you know, you have for ideas to make it more enjoyable, feel free to email me or call me or whatever.
Yeah.
I'd love for y'all to broadcast from there. I think that would be really cool.
Right.
Oh, heck yeah.
And if there's anybody down y'all's way that wants to come, you know, that's a good group, just let them know. You know, we got plenty of spaces left.
Well, I'll definitely talk to some groups around here and see if they're interested in coming.
Good.
And we're about to head off, so I just want to thank you guys very much for coming on the show and talking with us and telling us about your experiences and Paracon. Had a great time talking to you guys.
Yeah, well, thank you,
really
Ryan. Thank
it.
Everybody. I mean,
thanks a lot, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for coming
really
on.
We appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having us. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you in April.
Okay.
Right,
take
care.
See
you guys take care. All right. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
And we are left with 50 seconds to kill. Would you like me to put music on?
I think we had a good time with them.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, great guests. I'm looking forward to going down there. That's a great teacher, by the way.
Thank you.
I look forward to going down there and talking. Actually being face-to-face. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, I think anybody who's listening to this show and wants to head on to Newport News and go check out Paracon, you know, we'll be there broadcasting all our stations. All right, we're out. Have a great week. And next time we'll be broadcasting from the Rikers.
And we're gone.
That was cool.